Hillary Clinton told donors on a conference call this weekend that FBI Director James Comey's announcement about her emails just about 2 weeks before the election stopped our momentum. But liberal columnist Frank Bruni's headline was, "The Democrats screwed up." And George Packer wrote in The New Yorker that the party ignored the white working class, for which former MSNBC host Crystal Ball said in The Huffington Post, "The Democratic Party deserves to die." David Shribman is executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He uses a baseball metaphor. He writes, "The Democrats let Donald Trump steal their base and head for home." David joins us from Pittsburgh. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. And you were quoting a leading Pittsburgh executive who'd worked in Democratic campaigns who made that, you know, analogy to Donald Trump coming in and what?
Well, basically stealing the base of the Democrat Party. The Democratic Party was, the modern Democratic Party was formed in 1928 with Al Smith, in 1932 with Franklin Roosevelt. It was white working people. It was people who felt on the margins, the poor and the striving. And those are the people whom Donald Trump seemed to get.
Yeah, well, this gentleman you spoke with said the Democrats let a guy come in and say he was going to bring back those jobs. But aren't the Democrats, and this seems to be the complaint of everyone that I just mentioned, that the Democrats have turned away from the working class to what, the white educated professional class?
Well, they seem to be both of and for people who work at universities, people who are minorities, and they are very coastal.
Well, and Crystal Ball makes the same point. She's the former Democratic congressional candidate, but also a commentator for MSNBC. She writes a scathing piece in the Huffington Post saying, you know, the coal mines are gone, the steel mines are closed. In the face of Trump's willingness to boldly proclaim without facts or evidence he'd bring these good times back, we, the Democrats, offered a tepid gallows logic. Well, those jobs are gone for good, we knowingly told them. We offered a fantastical non-solution. We will retrain you for good jobs. Never mind that these good jobs didn't exist in East Kentucky or Cleveland. Aren't the Democrats, you know, haven't they been really in a difficult position here? Because how can you promise jobs that most economists say are not coming back to those regions? And I distinctly remember when President Obama talked about retraining people. But as she says, you know, those jobs aren't yet there in those areas. And the money wasn't there from Congress to retrain people. So what could Democrats do?
Well, first of all, that illuminates the center of the entire election, which is, while Donald Trump may not have had a prescription for bringing jobs back, he certainly had a diagnosis for the ailments and ills of all of those voters who voted with him. Now, he had no prescription, but he had a diagnosis. Mrs. Clinton didn't have really either. And that's the problem the Democrats have. I don't know how you bring jobs back to areas like eastern Kentucky and West Virginia. And maybe Donald Trump doesn't know either. But at least he spoke to that despair. He spoke to that need in a way that the Democrats didn't.
Yeah. So what do the Democrats do?
Well, the first thing the Democrats do is what they always do, is to hold a seminar at Harvard and try to figure out what went wrong.
Which further alienates them.
That's correct. Right. And after they do that, they're going to have to look into their own souls and wonder exactly what kind of party they are. Now, it may make demographic sense in the long term, though not in 2016, to be the party of professional women and to basically say, Virginia, you're gone, but we got New Jersey instead. That may be a long term, very, very smart calculation, and they have to figure out whether that was or not.
Well, a couple things. First of all, the Democrats can point to the fact that they did actually win the popular vote by hundreds of thousands of votes. Some might say, well, just be more tactical. Just go to those counties in Wisconsin and Michigan that Donald Trump went to and win those.
Well, let's at least start with go to Wisconsin at all, which mm-hmm. she didn't do since she got the nomination. You know, when she came to this area here, she went and spoke at the University of Pittsburgh. Well, every one of those people was already going to be for her. She didn't seem to go into places where she wasn't going to get a lot of votes.
Yeah, well, that's not what you're talking about anyway. You're talking about, you know, not being strategic and, you know, targeting a couple of counties. You're talking about changing the attitude of the party towards, you know, the problem.
Well, and also trying to figure out what is the nature and character of this party. Is it, in fact, the legatee of Al Smith and of Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman and Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy? Or is it really an Eisenhower kind of party? Or Is it Ellie Stevenson's party finally? You know, there's this wonderful story about Ellie Stevenson. Somebody came up to him during the 1956 campaign and said, Governor Stevenson, every thinking person is going to be for you. And he said, yes, I know that. But I need a majority. And Governor Stevenson understood what Hillary Clinton didn't understand, which is people who don't have degrees do have the vote. She has to decide, not she anymore, but the party has to decide exactly what its message is and who it is.
Well, before the election, you wrote a piece about this, Democrats, the party of the professional class, ? And you seem to have taken away that question mark. And you quote James Carville saying that for years we were in the fight for the guy in the truck with a gun rack. We lost those guys. The best thing that happened to us is that we lost that war. You know, is that what you're talking about, the attitude that we don't need them?
That may well be the right strategy for 2020 when the party speaks to minorities, who will be a growing part of the U.S. population, speaks also to college-educated people, which also is a growing part of the population. So it may be a smart strategy for 2020, but it was a disaster for 2016.
Well, but it's not just an issue of jobs. There's a cultural issue, a cultural war. Because as you write, yes, the Democrats have to, you know, be more cognizant of the white working class, but they're getting pummeled from the left, from liberals who think they've watered down their commitment to progressive policies and are out of touch on that side as well, even though on the other side they've got conservatives who regard them as so liberal with issues like, you know, gay marriage, for instance, that they're completely out of touch with that constituency.
Well, Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont make a good case. And they will, before this week or month is out, I guarantee they'll start describing themselves as members of the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. Now, their analysis isn't that much different from Donald Trump's. The themes are the same, and so maybe Mrs. Clinton ought to have spoken in that language, although she wasn't comfortable with it. She's not a populist. She's not a pugilist, and maybe she was just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. Talk some more about what you think the party does going forward. The coal jobs, the steel jobs, many of the manufacturing jobs are not coming back. So when President Donald Trump can't produce them either, you might still have that angry base looking for a leader.
Right, but many of the people who had steel jobs have moved on or died. So we, and I have to stop doing this as well, we have to stop worrying about the people who used to work in steel mills here in Pittsburgh. They left here about 25 years ago. They've settled in Washington and Charlotte and in Houston, and some of them went to South Dakota even to get telemarketing jobs. So the notion of trying to speak to steelworkers is kind of out of date. There are only 200 or so left here in Pittsburgh.
So given that, you know, what should the Democratic Party do?
They have to be a little less fancy. They have to be a little less erudite, maybe, a little more comfortable in their own skin, and they have to find a candidate who can vocalize what it means to be a Democrat.
And David, just one last question. This whole conversation has been boiled down to the Democrats are the party of the elites. You know, a lot of people—
Let's just take a second and reflect on that. The party of the elites used to be the Republicans.
Right.
And the irony here is the party of the establishment no longer has an establishment itself. And the Democrats became the party of the establishment. Of course, they were for so many years. But it's not a place to run from.
Well, but staying with this notion, some would say it was that whole notion was cooked up by Republicans calling Democrats the elites. But I was going to ask if that's a false narrative. There are a lot of people in the Democratic Party, those out on the streets protesting Donald Trump, who wouldn't see themselves as elite.
No, the whole notion of what an elite is has become basically corrupted. If you're a violinist, you want to be in the elite orchestra. And believe me, if you have a child who needs heart surgery, you want an elite surgeon. But we have debased the notion of elites because we think it's a bunch of people sitting in eating houses at Princeton. The notion of being elite used to be a compliment. Now it's derisive.
That's David Shribman, executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. David, thanks as always.
Oh, thank you so much. This was fun.